it's kind of fun. I mean, sometimes you get really good reads of yourself. Like, I feel like people are always like, look at that gay Elijah Wood, you know?
Oh, wow, that's a good one.
I know it is a good one.
It's actually
I thought that immediately.
Right. Really
one
good.
One time somebody commented, that that guy looks like Frodo learned a lot about himself on the way to Mordor.
Oh, my God.
Okay, what? Joan Rivers, like.
That's
wild. Let's get you staffed on the Tonight Show with that joke.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of
Tea Time
with
me and her, Miranda and Raven.
That's us. And today on the podcast, we have somebody that we literally just met, you guys.
Literally.
I'm not going to lie to you. It's just a fact. But we love making new friends, and I instantly felt connected to him. I don't know why. Maybe it's the ginger hair. Or the piercing blue eyes.
Or the beautiful pale skin.
It could be all of it. I think that I feel like he wears as much sunblock as I do. Brendan Scannell.
So nice to meet you.
Welcome
as well.
To the
so
podcast.
So nice to meet you.
I feel like we're on a first date.
Okay, get the
are.
Liquor. Get the liquor.
Yeah.
I don't drink.
Oh.
Neither
I
do
used
I.
to drink too much. Just to start things off
yeah,
really.
Yeah, we need to know this.
Yeah,
what was the drink of choice when it was too much?
Tequila, vodka, pretty much the bar,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah, that's fair. So you do like kombucha now?
I don't do kombucha. It kind of upsets my stomach.
Do you do beet juice?
I do beet juice, but I make it myself.
Oh!
Interesting. Mm-hmm. We've been fermenting beets and eating them ourselves.
Okay.
And drinking the juice that comes from it.
It's really quite delicious.
Wow.
What don't else you do you put in your
city?
Juice? Yeah.
Celery, carrots. I love carrot juice. Ginger.
Yeah. Gotta love a ginger. I just came across some young ginger, which is the kind of ginger that you make for sushi, and I pickled it, and it's delicious in a drink.
See, these are the types of things I didn't do when I was an alcoholic because I was too busy drinking. And now in my sobriety, I am like, ooh, I can juice and read.
Oh, yeah.
You can read a lot about shipwrecks.
So much. I love shipwrecks.
Why?
I think it's kind of like this is a male interest, shipwrecks.
Okay.
Women, by and large, don't care about shipwrecks. If you are a woman who loves shipwrecks, well.
I care about the Titanic.
Oh, yes. Well, that's one of the important ones.
I care about Below Deck.
Oh, I love Below Deck. Are you watching Med?
Yes,
Below Deck
I am.
Med right now?
I am.
Is crazy. If you're a producer on Below Deck Med, I'm voting for you for the Emmys this year. It's because basically they've like loved Love Island, this cast.
They really have.
Like everyone's in a relationship.
A baby's coming.
A baby's coming.
A baby's coming.
A baby is coming. They tease that. Yep.
And Captain Sandy is completely checked out, per usual.
What happened to Captain Sandy's face? She's had work done.
Well, she's going through a divorce, I think.
But also engaged.
She got married. And this could be completely false. I feel like I've read somewhere that she is now separated from her wife. And if, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
That's to spread fake lesbian rumors.
Listen, with a lesbian, you never really know what's going on.
I'm so confused, though, because on the show, she looks how she does, but she's all loved up. And they, like, show on the first episode the proposal.
Mm.
So, I don't know.
I don't follow reality TV outside of the show. Yeah. Like, Housewives, I don't follow them on Instagram. I don't want to know anything that's not, like, canon the show.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I try not to learn anything.
Like, tell us something that we don't know about shipwrecks.
Well, my favorite shipwreck is this shipwreck. It's called The Wager, and basically off the coast of Patagonia in the 1700s, this British ship crashed. Mm-hmm. And get this. So, like, they go through this shipwreck, and then 6 months later, a ragtag group of them appear off the coast of Brazil, and they're like, we survived. It was crazy. This is the story. 3 months later, a different group of survivors appear, and they have their own story, and they're like, that's not what happened. This is what happened. And so it's two warring stories. It's basically a he said about this shipwreck.
That's crazy. I just have one more question. Are you the type of person who would get in, like, a submersible and, like, go and see them?
No, absolutely not.
You just want to read about it.
I never want to die in a way where people are like, yeah, duh. Like,
it's fair.
Skydiving accident. Just no.
Not that adventurous.
Going to space. You didn't go to space, right?
Well, no.
Not
yet. I mean, not in a ship.
Were you offered?
No, I wasn't offered.
You would have been first on my list.
I would have totally gone.
my and God. I would have supported you.
Thank you.
Raven yeah. and Gail. Bye. Our newest astronauts.
My
Katy
outfit would
Perry,
have been better.
Raven and Gail.
If you had been in space, you would have been changed.
Period.
My friend's dad just better. Paid to go to space.
How much did he pay?
$1 million.
Get out of here.
Wait, with he went on like
with the
Amazon.
Bezos one.
A Got million?
It. Yeah. And I'm a little bit like, I'd be pissed at my dad. Not that my family has that type of money, but I'd be like, you're taking the generational wealth.
You're taking yeah. my inheritance.
You're taking $1 million so you can go to space?
But did
Shut
he,
up, Dad.
What did he say?
The dad loved space. In the video of his group going to space, he was like the star of the video. He was like, it's extraordinary. It's changing how I feel about everything.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, I can imagine that would, because you see how fucking small you really are and how insignificant you really are.
I feel that
you
on
just
an everyday
go
basis.
All the way
in
out
this
there.
Town.
No space yeah. necessary.
I mean, this is true. That is actually.
I'm sorry. I need to pay $1 million to feel that way. Fuck out of here.
Wait. So you and your boyfriend Joe play a game that I also play, and it's called the Cherry Jones Alert.
You play Cherry Jones Alert?
I
Wait,
do.
What is the game?
It is it's the game is that every time you see Cherry Jones in something, you literally say Cherry Jones. And
you guys, who's Cherry Jones?
Cherry Jones.
Cherry
she would
Jones.
Know, Raven, you would know her face if you saw her.
Sorry, Cherry.
Cherry. We oh play God. It for different reasons, though.
Oh, my God. You'll know who Cherry yeah. Jones is. She looks like that.
Oh, I love Cherry Jones.
Love Cherry Jones.
Oh, okay. I love her.
Cherry, if you're listening, we're all huge fans.
You're yeah, amazing.
So, this is why I play the game, though. Yeah. Because my dad went to Carnegie Mellon with her.
Wow.
And so they've been friends for many, many years. So every time we would see Cherry as little kids, it was exciting. Like my sister and I would be like, oh, hi, it's our friend. It's Cherry. But why do you play it?
She's just one of those actors who pops up in things and makes everything better.
Yeah.
And... yeah, so that's what we play Cherry Jones Alert. We try to play a lot of games when we're watching TV. I'm kind of one of those people where if you're watching something with me, I'm talking the whole time. Very annoying. Yeah. But he puts up with me.
That's kind.
I mean, that's what happens when you play a therapist on the street with people. You just know how to talk and you know how to.
You guys really went through my Instagram.
Well, you know.
Scroll. That's a deep scroll.
But you have to be able to talk to people. My wife is a low-key, we're not going to talk about this, therapist in her own right.
Really?
I would like for you guys to just take 2 moments and therapize each other.
Well, we could make it a couples therapy session.
No, let's not do that.
Have you ever done couples therapy?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, we've done it as well.
And back to what I asked.
Well, my boyfriend and I, we did couples therapy because he was refusing to get a therapist, so I got us a couples therapist, but secretly it was his therapist. And I was just like... you know, leading a horse to water, essentially.
That's a smart, like, hoodwinking way to get yeah. somebody in there.
Right.
Babes, how did our couples therapy go?
Well, we went to couples therapy the first time when we were early dating, and it didn't go well at all. And then we went again when we were newly married, and it didn't go well at all.
Yeah.
So we've just opted not to communicate in that way.
Here's one of my issues with our couples therapist was like he really identified with my boyfriend. Like he was very like, I'm like that. And then he would look at me and he'd be like, devil.
So the
plan backfired essentially because Joe felt very validated by this therapist, which was not the goal. Wasn't my goal. My goal was to get him to hang up his towels after he showers so that I don't blow my brains out.
Mm. Yeah. She had that problem with me. I wouldn't close any doors in the kitchen ever. And then I just came back with 50%, babe.
50%. Yeah. And then that was a reframe. But you want to know something interesting?
Yeah.
So Socrates, he married the most...
Let's go there.
Well,
Let's
listen, because this is interesting to me. Yeah. Socrates married the most complicated... her reputation was to be the most complicated woman in his village. And the reason that he did that, and the most difficult she was known as, and the reason he did that was to prove that his Socratic method really worked.
Wow.
And
commitment.
I think, though, that in a way, when you're challenged in relationships, if you come back to yourself and you reframe it kind of as a test and an opportunity for you to work through certain irritations, frustrations, hurts, you you become better in yourself. And so I think that, I don't know, it's just an interesting reframe to me. It's like the harder that things can become in relationship, the more it is a test for you to be more tolerant of the towel on the floor. Like, you're clearly triggered and you want to blow your brains out, but how do you not get to that level? How do you find a way just to pick up the towel or ignore it or communicate in a different way that he recognizes how much it's impacting you? And that's the thing too, right? It's getting to a place in your relationship where you start going, this is so bothersome to the person I love and care about that I'm going to change my pattern or become more aware. And
or they can pick up the towels and you can have an easier relationship. It just depends on which one.
That's what I just said though. Like, that's,
I get what you're saying in terms of being able to deal with irritation or things that are distressing. That's a big part of, like, sobriety is, you know, the alcohol or the substance is a dissociation. Right? As it's a way, it's a balm on irritation of, like, being alive. Yeah. And so, yeah, in a relationship, I think I always find, like, in especially queer relationships, I think that, like, the world can be very unloving. So my goal in our home is to create, like, a loving space where, like, two damaged men, boyish men, young men,
yeah,
can grow together and be their best selves.
I love that. I think that's so beautiful. And that's so healing for both of you if cultivated appropriately and you guys can work your stuff out. But that's the beauty of a safe relationship and a safe space, and the fact that you're making your home that is, I love that.
Do you ever find that you look for help in the typical fashion, meaning a TikTok or, you know, a ChatGPT, and find that the recommendations are heterosexual based? I feel like I kind of encounter that sometimes with, you know, well, this is what this person says. I'm like, I think that's based in heterosexual relationships.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, I only had queer therapists in my adult life now. My current therapist that I see is an old gay guy who I love. He's always just like, oh, it's Studio 54, the Quaaludes. Yeah, I'm obsessed with him, mostly because I just want him to tell stories. But more about you. But yeah, I think I try not to look to technology to tell me what to do at all. I'm very much like in-person, tactile, even like making a reservation at a restaurant. I'm like, I'm calling, I'm asking, I'm like, what tables do you have? Do you have a table near here? Because I do feel like most technology is meant to, like, remove us from...
It does, yeah. Isolate each other. Yeah, it disconnects us, essentially, right, from ourselves and others. So, quickly, back to your safe space of a home and the love that you two are trying to cultivate together. I'm really curious to know what you thought about Heated Rivalry, because I know that had to be on in your home.
Oh, yeah. We had so much fun watching that. You know, you ever just, like, with your boyfriend and you're like, are you hard?
Actually, no. I don't think we've experienced that. I'm just playing with you.
Yes.
Both our voices dropped, obviously, when we're watching the show. Yeah. I loved that show. It was so fun and
so good.
Kind of that kind of wish fulfillment type TV show. And went
totally.
Really fun.
So good. I was obsessed with it, watching it. And it's interesting because in hearing conversations, a lot of women are really, really obsessed with it. I haven't actually talked to that many gay men about it. Jack and I talked about it briefly. But I think that women are obsessed with seeing men being so emotionally vulnerable and then seeing the expression of love. Like, it is very wish fulfillment. It is very fantasy in a lot of ways, but it's so romantic.
Right.
And oh, it just did everything for me.
From, we should just watch it again, babes.
From horniness to crying to just being like, I think I want to be a gay man. Like, I was just like, this is amazing. And I think I want to play hockey. Hence the outlet.
Do you skate?
No, not at all. Not even close.
Do you skate?
Hell no.
No way.
No. I used to rollerblade back in the day, though.
I believe that.
That was a thing.
I had to rollerblade in a TV show once, and they trained me to do it, still couldn't do it. And then when it was all happening, the director, who Leslie Headland, lesbian, she came up to me and she was like, "You're ruining all my shots. I need you," because I couldn't, like, we'd be, it was, I was supposed to be really good at it, and then I just kept being like,
"Oh yeah." Wow, you've learned a lot of things with the different shows that you've been on, and something that I need you to teach me is how to tie my wife up correctly.
Oh sure. I did do a BDSM show that was very fun.
Bonding.
Yes.
Yeah. That was like a sexy show. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of, in a heated rivalry way, people will come up to me and they'll be like, "My wife and I loved that show." A lot of women love that show.
Women. And we're just horny, timing.
Craving.
Craving. Yearning.
I
longing.
Didn't actually do a lot of the tying.
No.
There is a one scene where I actually did tie, and a lot of the professional sex worker, BDSM workers who watch the show were like, "That tie wouldn't hold."
I love those kind of people.
Me too. They're just like factual.
They just stop you in the middle of the street. You're ordering a sandwich. You know that tie wouldn't hold.
Exactly.
Like, I'm ordering a sub, sir.
I can't even tie. And I was like, "Well, he was new at it."
Just the whole conversation. I think BDSM tying up is absolutely beautiful. I think that she when really done correctly, and as long as everybody's consensual and all that, I think it's one of the most beautiful body art manipulations. But I also like watching people get pierced and hang from the ceiling. So I'm weird.
Our the intimacy coordinator on that show, she that was the world she came from, and I have rope that she would make the rope. She would, you know, however you make rope, braid it.
Yeah.
She would braid it and then burn it to, like, seal it. Mm-hmm. And it had a smell. And then she would dip it in a certain coloring to paint it. She had made her own rope. It was
beautiful.
It is artistic in a way.
Artistic. Very intimate and very consensual.
Very consensual.
Have you seen... Raven just referred to it. Have you seen those people who get their backs pierced and then they hang from, they like pull?
Yeah, that's
super intense.
I enjoy watching that so much. It's really scary. Let's move on. It's weird.
Let's move on to the lip sync battle of Mamma Mia you did.
Wow, we're just going through my whole IMDb.
It's fine. That's what we like to do.
I need you guys to call my managers and be like, "Look at how much he's done."
You've done a lot.
We got you, boo. Agents, get on it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And give him more.
More. Why not?
Did you just love that song? Did you choose it?
I love Mamma Mia.
Yeah?
Well, it's my
Which
favorite.
Which one?
The first one.
Okay.
But I love
You mean
both
like
of them.
The musical.
The musical.
Love the musical, love ABBA. But yeah, that was the song I chose. And did you do Lip Sync Battle?
No. Can you call my agents and tell them that I can sing and I should be on that show?
A strange part about that was most of the people who had done the first couple seasons were extremely famous people.
Yeah.
And then I did it at a time when there was like CBS trying to do, Paramount trying to do some like brand integration with the show that I was on.
Heathers, right?
Heathers, yeah. So nobody in the audience, I didn't even know who I was. And so I was still learning who I was. But the backup dancers were amazing. It made me feel like I could actually dance.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
I would love to do something like that just for that.
Well, you've been Dougieing.
Yes, I've been Dougieing, and I've been trying to learn how to Dougie.
Are you going to Dougie with her before you leave today?
I don't even know what the Dougie is. You'd have to show me.
Oh, babes, to teach another is crazy.
I don't know that I'm at the level yet where I can teach another.
Well, imagine if you, a new Dougier, like I was like a new dancer in that performance, all of a sudden had like 30 professional Dougiers around you whose whole job and day rate was based on them making you feel really good.
Not day rate, I'm dead.
Well,
day
I don't
rate
know.
Is important.
Day rate dancers. I imagine there was some sort of day rate. And they were all so supportive. They were like, "You're killing it. You're a star." And that's when you go crazy in this town. You're like, "Everyone's obsessed with me.
Very true.
I'm so famous." And then you like walk off a set and people, you know, you get hit by a car and no one cares.
Yeah. But that is infectious. And that energy, even if you weren't doing amazing or whatever, the fact that you're being given that energy is going to make you better, I believe. Because when I've had positive reinforcement or I just like lose my brain a little bit and feel what's happening, I Dougie better. Mm. And it has been, it's been really nice to get people who, or to have the interactions with people that are so positive and have people be like, do this, do that. You know, it's just, it's nice. It's nice to feel like you're.
That's pure.
It's pure.
It's not tainted by the bullshit.
No. My wife and I had a honeymoon. It was very small.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was very small. We went to Big Bear.
Oh, lovely.
And I felt like they hated us there. Mm. I felt like they were not really loving of the gay community.
Interesting.
So if you could just tell me a little bit about this play that you did about Big Bear, maybe you can help me grasp it a little bit.
Yes. I did a play written by a friend of mine in the fall, a play in L.A., can you believe?
Wow.
Called Big Bear, and it was a group of friends in an Airbnb, and it was like the Sunday after a group trip, and everything went really well on the trip, and then all of a sudden, like, their friend group explodes because of, like, one inciting incident, kind of a living room play. Mm. And it was a great experience.
And you played the evil gay.
I did play it. I think a misunderstood gay guy, who ultimately you realize, not to spoil, that his partner was not a very good partner to him, and maybe that's why he was acting out through that's most fair. Of the trip, was to because he felt like he wasn't being heard or
depth.
Respected.
Layers.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
How do you feel about plays versus scripted versus stand-up?
I hadn't done a play in a long time, so I loved doing a play. I'm doing another play right now. And yeah, I think as the industry has changed and contracted, there's still so many opportunities to be creative and be around creative people.
Did you play a lot as a child? Or did you just write?
I did play.
Really creative letters.
What is that? Oh my God.
To Santa Claus.
Wow, where did you find that? Is it on my Instagram?
Santa Claus. This year I want...
Exclamation point.
Any kind of Lego system. Baywatch Ken, in parentheses, a Barbie. Hot Skater Ken, in parentheses, a Barbie. Power Wheels, parentheses, for boys.
Mm-hmm. I thought that said gays. That does look like
a G. It does look like for gays, yeah. Right?
It's so funny. Handcuffs, in parentheses, with keys. Don't wake daddy. No. Robot, and anything else you want.
Great handwriting.
Thank you. I had just learned parentheses, too.
Yeah.
This is the most amazing thing I think I've ever seen. How old were you?
I think I was 8 or 9, because it was 1998. And yeah, that's my actual Christmas list. And it has a double Barbie.
Did Santa deliver?
No.
Did you know you were gay?
No, but I knew I wanted all of those things. Yeah.
Why? Why the handcuffs with keys?
I think cops and maybe robbers? Cop stuff. We played a lot as a kid. I wanted to be like handcuffed to a pole. You know how it is.
Wow. Well, yeah.
I want to know, right under the handcuffs, it says, don't wake daddy.
Well, that's don't wake daddy. That's the game, you know, the one where you're doing little...
Oh.
You know, you're doing surgery to pull things out of
bed. Oh, is that called
Operation?
Don't wake daddy?
Don't wake daddy.
I thought you were telling him not to wake your dad.
No, don't wake daddy is a game, probably by Hasbro.
We'll look it up.
Hilarious.
And if it's not, we're going to dive back into that.
I literally just thought you were saying don't wake my dad up when you come in, which I thought was equally hilarious.
Yeah, my mom, I'm one of 5 kids, and so I think Christmas, she would sort of get your list, and she would take it as a suggestion, you know,
nice.
Because
yeah.
She really, she would go to Marshall's and kind of just be like, what's around, and throw everything, and then later in my, you know, middle school and stuff, we would actually get the Marshall's receipt, and so basically then you could go return everything she gave you from Santa, and just go on a Marshall's shopping spree, which as a, you know, 13-year-old gay kid was lovely.
So fun.
That's amazing. Both you and my wife's childhood when it comes to Christmas presents is entirely different than my experience.
What was yours?
You better enjoy this present because we worked hard for it and you're not going to return it, and I want to see you wear it or play with it within the year. I don't care if you like it or not.
Wow. Was there any one thing in particular that you remember not liking that you had to...
Pretty much almost everything. Yeah, and it's funny because I remember, it's so funny, trauma is hilarious.
Right.
My brother, I got him some type of like ball toy. I think it was like a Nerf paddle thing. And he's like, I don't like this. He got in so much trouble because he didn't say thank you, that even from that point on, I was like, you better just say thank you. Take the thing. I used to have closets filled with stuff that I just didn't really play with. So when we got together, she was like, I want this. I'm like, uh-uh, no. I give you what. It's really hard for me to unprogram myself.
Yeah, my family was very much like, if I'm going to give you a gift, I want to make sure that you want the gift. Mm. And so my mom was always really specific about, like, write out a list of 10 things that you want. You'll maybe get, you know, 5 of those things. And I want you to enjoy them. Now, there are family members of mine. My mom is 1 of 8. So I have many aunts and uncles who would get, like, every year, it was a running joke, my sister would get a bead kit from a specific aunt every fucking year. And my sister, like,
those take a while to go through, too. Yeah,
but also, like,
you gotta make a bunch of beads.
She didn't want them. Like, it was not, you know, so it was like every year she got the bead kit, every year we would go and donate it. It became like a bit of a, you know, routine tradition.
Didn't your mom, like, donate a whole bunch of your toys and then took you to the place and you were like, this is my toy, and
so
I want
my
it back.
Mom had. This is something that we've had to. Raven's had to experience with me too. But my mom would go through spurts, which I now, as an adult, and now she, as more of an adult, understands was her in a manic phase of her bipolar. She would go through these really huge purges, and she would just like get rid of everything in our house, and it was just like clean out time, and we were like getting rid of just you know, she'd be pulling things out of our closets and shoes and backpacks and things. And so she went through one of those, and we went to a thrift store like a week or two after the big purge because she had another bag. And I'm walking around and I'm like, oh I have that too And the entire fucking 2 front window displays was basically my entire life. And I was like, what is that? I was like, wait, that's Wilbur. That's my pig. What this is it? And I, like, all, it's like my eyes just opened to the whole scene before me. And my mom, I was like, Mom. And she was like, oh my God, Miranda. Oh, honey, I'm so sorry. Oh my gosh. And she had to buy it all back because I, like, threw a fucking fit.
We love you, Miss Teresa.
That must have been
trauma. We love trauma here.
Well, having a mother who is in that state, I imagine as a kid, is confusing.
It was extremely confusing because then it was also met with like going to bed for like a week and darkness and quiet and this. So I was very confused because then it was like the next Saturday she would be building a new pantry because she went to IKEA, and she's like all of a sudden like hammer, and I was like, oh, okay, we're alive again. And then it was very confusing and very I never knew what I was gonna get, and it also in the darkness it was like I was invisible, and in the highs I was seen, so I felt like I was loved sometimes and hated other times. So I didn't understand that. And that definitely fucked with me because I was young when that was all happening.
Right.
So, yeah, it was.
What's your trauma?
It was a thing.
Well, that, I mean, my sibling's bipolar and schizophrenic. And it's, it's hard when they're in that state and I imagine as a kid, there's even more just confusion because you're not fully getting the whole picture.
Correct.
Yeah,
the schizophrenia element, I've had two friends, and that's a really hard one. And the medication there is really challenging.
It's so imperfect, too. And our healthcare system is, unfortunately, sometimes even if you want to help someone that you really love, you don't have the legal right to, and they have their own rights to live in their own delusions.
Yeah, correct.
So, you have to sort of come to peace with the fact that, like, they might just not be okay or safe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's hard when it's family. For
really
sure.
Hard. It's really hard. You said you're 1 of 5?
1 of 5, yeah.
Where are you in the...
I'm in the middle.
Mm.
How do you think your placement in birth order has impacted you in life?
And your career.
Well, I feel like as in the middle, I was kind of able to do my own thing and sort of like come up for attention when I needed it and then sneak away when I didn't or didn't want it, if that makes sense. And my older sisters are really high functioning. So I kind of like idolized them, which was great. And then as kind of the oldest son, there was like, I think even as an adult, I feel a sense of like, I need to take care of this family, even though no one's really asking for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'll like step in moments of crisis and be like, I'm here. And everyone's like, great. Like, where were you? And thanks for showing up.
Yeah. I'm a white man. Right. I can do this.
He, him. I'm here. Finally. Right? I like show up and to save the day. And everyone's like, we're good.
Gotta love family.
Was acting and performing always something that you loved or were drawn to?
I think it was the first thing I was really good at. And as a kid, when you're good at something, everyone's really, I think, oftentimes, my family was healthy enough to be like, that's making you feel good. You should continue to do it. And so that's kind of where that came from.
And when you mean you were good at it, were you that Eddie Murphy story, standing in front of the television, doing your own little shows for the family? Or were you in school doing like theater things?
I think I was in school and started doing shows. And then my parents put me in like Second City classes when I was a preteen because I was outside Chicago. And then I did a voiceover for Mortal Kombat when I was like 12.
Wait, what did you do?
I played the tutorial kid, and I'd be like, Shujinko, go to Master Bo Raicho's temple. But my voice was really high.
Yes! Right?
And I think I got paid, it was non-union, and I got paid $300 for 3 hours of work. And I was like, well, that's my career now. I just got paid more money than a kid should make to...
Yeah.
To do play, have fun. Exactly. And I was like, that's what I should do.
Mortal Kombat was me and my brother's favorite game.
Really?
Yeah.
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 Get over here. Yeah.
Where'd you grow up?
Indiana.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's why you know Jack.
I met Jack out here, but yeah, I'm from Indiana. I'm from like an hour from Chicago, near Gary.
Oh my gosh.
There's really good hair for Indianians.
You.
Yeah. Everybody over here, they just got really good
thick
hair.
That's so true.
What is it? Is it the milk?
All three of you.
Where are you two from?
I'm from LA and I have shit hair.
I'm from the South. I'm black.
You have good hair. You both have great hair.
She's from the South and I'm black.
Have you seen the documentary Good Hair?
I was in
Yes.
You were in that? Okay, sorry.
Don't worry about it, boo-boo. It's okay. I look totally different.
That's a great documentary.
Yeah,
oh, it is. But it's actually, she's so right. Like, you have fantastic hair. Jack has amazing hair. Laura has this thick head.
Do you
want
to go to Indiana real quick, babe?
I think it's all the lead, you know?
It's the lead.
It's sort of like the runoff from the steel mill. It makes you, it's like Spider-Man.
Does your dad still have a full head of hair?
My parents both do, yeah. Yeah, and I think I hopefully always will.
Yeah.
Looks like it will.
If not, I'm going to Turkey.
Period. Oh, I'll come. Let's go together.
Let's go.
Yeah.
You don't need to go yet, but Jack, do your mom and dad have full heads of hair?
They both do. And my dad has really thick white hair and he's almost, he's 65.
Laura, I know the answer about your dad, but your mom.
Super thick.
And she's Syrian.
My dad just shaved his head, actually. It's great.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, sexy. It's that time of year.
Yeah, he's built too. He looks good.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's that, right? I think that's also
drooling
part
over
of
your
it.
Dad, Laura.
You have the Middle Eastern gene, which is good hair. Damn, I'm jealous, you guys.
Don't be jealous.
I think you have beautiful hair.
Well, thanks. I'm losing it.
Really?
So, yes. So, when I was a kid, not that you asked, but I'm going to tell you, I had really thick, curly hair, and no one really knew how to handle it, but it was, I thought it was my lion's mane because I'm a Leo, and I was like, this is cool, and I have this lion's mane. Then, as I got older, it started to get more fine and more thin, but I had done a lot of straightening on it because, again, I had this frizz and this curl that I didn't really know how to handle as a white person. And
her dad had a Jufro, but he's not Jewish.
Ah.
Yeah. And it just started, I think I have female pattern baldness because it's all up in the front that I'm just like losing all of this hair. And it's really traumatic losing your hair.
Yeah.
It's a very vulnerable, weird, uncomfortable thing, self-consciousness thing. So,
but she's married to me, so I'm gonna hit her with the lace front whenever she's
sure.
ready. You
yeah.
know what I mean? We'll
yeah.
make sure her edges are laid and
yeah.
fried. We'll be good.
I have good wig culture around me.
Yeah, you do.
I had an illness maybe like 5 years ago, and then I recovered from it, but about 3 months later, I started losing my hair, which happens sometimes when women give birth.
Yeah,
too. It's like.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Telium efflugigen or something like that, where if you go through something really traumatic, your body, like your hair cells die at that moment. So then 3 months later when they, your roots die or something. So then when the 3 months pass and they like reach the end, they start falling out. Yeah. And I was like, I'm dying.
Yeah, no, it's really, and postpartum hair loss is really traumatic for a lot of women because, I mean, it's just a hard time in general, but then you start losing your hair and you're just like, what the fuck, and that'll come out in clumps. But the thing I always say to people who are experiencing that type of hair loss is, don't worry, your hair will grow back. It's not a genetic thing that's going on. It's literally just a situational thing.
So. I like that you both have little things. You've got your squeezy and you've got your
fidget toys.
You guys, are eyebrows considered facial hair?
Eyebrows
are you saying that because mine are so light?
No. She can't see them. Right. Eyebrows are facial hair for sure.
Okay.
Are they?
I guess so. Hair on the face.
You both have beautiful eyebrows.
Mine are tatted. Thank you.
They are. Yeah. When did you get that done?
Oh my goodness.
She's been getting it.
Over 6 years ago.
Wow.
It took me a long time to get that done because I drew them on all the time and they grew upside down. Thank you. It gets me in trouble and I appreciate that. 5 years ago, though, you started learning French. Je parle français?
I did start learning.
Tu parles français?
Not anymore.
No, me neither. Did you choose Duolingo?
I did. There's a school in Silver Lake called Cuckoo, and I started taking classes in person, and then it was the pandemic, so then I took them all online. But then after a while, I felt like I was kind of just Zooming with the instructors because it was like a good hang. Guys, I don't have a brain for languages. And do you? Like, do you speak? I should have been learning Spanish. To be in LA and learning French felt so silly.
I've been taking Spanish since kindergarten.
Okay? Are you fluent?
No. Pero sí se puede.
Sí se puede.
Listen, she gets by very well.
I do get by. I think I know. I understand more than I can speak, and it's really hard because it will get mumbled in my head. But for the amount of time that I have been in Spanish class, I really should be fluent. It's really embarrassing. So maybe I know I have a lot of issues and a lot of disabilities and differences in my brain and how I learn and function and do all. It's just the truth.
Do you guys think it is a brain thing?
It might relate to that. Yeah.
I don't know. When I went, I took 2 years of French Zoom lessons and then I went to Paris and I was like, ooh, je voudrais une bouteille de vin blanc, s'il vous plaît.
Yeah.
And the waiters would be like, yeah, you got to stop that. Like, it's...
You want a white wine.
And then I also feel like when I would learn languages, I would do a voice. Like,
oh, yeah.
I'd be like, oh, je voudrais.
That's how I got an A in French class, by accenting the whole thing.
Well, then I went to Japan and we learned a couple words.
Yes.
And I would do, you know, my version of, you know, arigato gozaimasu.
Arigato gozaimasu.
And my boyfriend would be like, you're doing a voice. And I'd be like, I think I'm doing the language. And then one person in Tokyo was like, you said that very well. And I was like, see, I'm not doing the voice. I'm doing the accent.
Yeah.
But some languages need the accent and the voice and the words to actually work, especially the Asian-based cultures, because I started trying to learn Korean, and I'm doing it in an American accent, you know, kamsahamnida, and it, no, that's, hold on, kamsahamnida. And that's not it. It has to be kamsahamnida, like it's a voice, and then the Duolingo is like, ting, ting, ting. So
right.
I think it's a thing.
And you got to get the ting, ting, ting.
Ting, ting, ting.
And in China, there are so many different dialects. And I think Mandarin specifically is all sound.
Tonal.
Mm-hmm. It's all tonal. So it really is. I was listening to somebody try and say something and they were saying the words correctly, but their sound was wrong. And you wouldn't hear it unless you actually had the ear to know to hear this or somebody, I guess, pointed it out to you. But it's the difference between like, ha-ha, and like, ha-ha. Like, you know, just emphasis in certain places. It's very, it's that,
so
that's
keep doing
complicated.
That. Keep doing those sounds.
I should get back into my French.
Some
or
people,
take a, if there's like, drop it in the comments, Spanish language school in Los Angeles. I want to be in person. I think over the computer, over the Zoom, it kind of took me out of it.
The immersion really helps.
Yeah.
That's very true. I think, though, the French are particularly difficult. My friend is, her mom is French. She is totally bilingual, but she will still get anxiety in Paris or when she goes to visit family speaking fully in French because she'll one word off and people will be like, ha-ha.
Yeah, they have they have like a pretty strong, like they have their own slang.
Yes, they do.
Well, but
it's called ha-ha.
It's called ha-ha. But yeah, like they have this whole slang where you're basically saying the words backwards.
Ooh.
I couldn't understand it because I could barely understand the words forwards. Mm-hmm. But then there is like the French language council who basically is like deciding how everyone in the world should speak French.
No way.
And that was a big part of like their, you know, colonialization and the French language spread throughout, you know, Africa and all of their colonies was like there was still a strict way those people who were, you know, French was imposed on them how they were supposed to speak it.
Yeah, I really like that, to be honest with you, because if
rules.
I like rules.
She likes rules.
Because if we had that for the English language, then I think words like bussin' would just stay exactly where it belongs, which is just bus and not meaning good food.
I didn't even know that. Yeah.
I just, you know, it becomes each generation takes a word, changes the meaning, mm-hmm. and then expects the generation before it to understand it immediately.
Do you guys want to hear the whitest experience I've ever witnessed? You're super white.
Thank you.
I'm super
Damn.
White, too.
Thank you. thank you for noticing.
But listen to what happened.
The
other day, my cousin told me that
You're putting
she...
putting her on blast. This is crazy.
I am putting you on blast. She doesn't watch this shit. My cousin said to me, because she saw a reel of mine on Instagram doing the Dougie with Tiffany Haddish, she was like, this isn't funny because you can't hit the moves. It's funny because of how bad your outfit is. And she
gets
went,
better.
Who needs cousins like this?
Right. One.
Cousins, back off.
Yeah.
This is a message for all cousins out there. I don't even know you that well.
For real, though. For real.
For real,
so,
though.
She then proceeds to tell me, and this is all over DM, too. And I'm like, we don't even fucking talk. Like, I
don't
understand.
Even have my number
like,
to text
you don't,
me. That
exactly. Literally. So then she was like, it looks like you just threw something on to go help your mom with the groceries.
That was wild.
Mind you, I really was tempted to be like, bitch, let me just break down the price of everything that I'm wearing right now. Like, this isn't what
careful.
I would normally do, but I'm just like
shitting on him.
I'm just like,
careful.
I am being careful. I'm just like, don't make me go there. You're mm-hmm. making me go somewhere I don't want to go,
it's
basically.
It's ugly because it's expensive.
Correct. Correct. Have you ever seen the Balenciaga homeless shoes? I mean, come on, bitch.
Fantastic. Of course.
Okay, so anyway, my response to her was, thanks. What I'm hearing is you think my outfit is fire. Her response, now everyone here understands what that means, right?
Yeah, because we're cultured.
Okay. Her response was, oh, no, don't set it on fire. It's not that bad. And I was like,
who is your cousin? Like Jeff Ross? Like, why is your cousin just coming with these roasts?
But also just like something is not happening. She literally thought she wasn't roasting in that moment. She literally thought that I was saying I was going to set it on fire. Mm. And she was like, please don't.
Yeah, she
burn it. You don't have to burn it.
There's a literacy problem in this country.
It's because there's no consistency with mm-hmm. the language. If she would have got the memo that my outfit is fire, then she would have understood the comeback.
She would have understood my sarcasm.
But that is a white thing.
She would have understood the sarcasm that was like, thank you. You're telling me that you love my outfit. I'm receiving that compliment, bitch. And instead, she was like, oh, Miranda, don't set it on fire. It's not that bad. I was like, you.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I give up.
When you are in the public eye and when you are dressing or when you play a character, you are just open for critique from everyone and they mama, no matter what.
And you know that.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of fun. I mean, sometimes you get really good reads of yourself. Like, I feel like people are always like, look at that gay Elijah Wood, you know?
Oh, wow,
I get
that's
that.
A good one.
I know it is a good one.
It's actually
I thought that immediately.
That's really
one
good.
One time somebody commented, that guy looks like Frodo learned a lot about himself on the way to Mordor.
Oh, my God.
Okay,
what?
Joan Rivers, like.
That's
get
wild.
You
I don't
staffed
like
on the Tonight Show with that joke.
That's funny.
That's hilarious.
But also, Elijah, like, Frodo and Sam, I mean, there was something going on there.
That was
undeniable.
The original heated rivalry.
quite literally. And it was very heated because Middle Earth is hot. Yeah,
I got called a poodle.
You did.
Yeah, my hair was so curly that Perez Hilton called me a poodle.
Perez Hilton, presumably dead, right?
Correct.
Presumably?
R.I.P.
Wait, what?
I don't know.
No, he's very much alive. I thought we were just doing a bit.
I don't know. Yeah, I just haven't checked it on him.
He's dead to us.
Dead to us, exactly.
Oh, got it.
I hope you're well, Perez. I imagine at this point the career's turning to MAGA financially.
Without a doubt.
That's just the way it eventually
goes.
Without
a doubt.
You bankrupt yourself, and then you're like, go Trump.
Yep.
And it's like your sort of last ditch to make any sort of income as a performer.
Yeah, he has kids now. He has to make do something.
You got to make it.
Yeah.
He's still doing things. He's lost weight. He's probably on Ozempic.
Just start there.
He's crying.
He called you a poodle?
Yeah, he said she looks like
her hair.
That was probably in the height of his fame, too.
It was, but it was also
in the height of
racist.
Like, you were a kid.
I was.
Fuck that.
He was really mean, though. I think he's apologized for, like, a generalized apology.
Never apologized to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I said generalized.
Or me.
Yeah.
Or
we need an apology, Perez. I feel like he opened the door for those comments and for...
In a lot of ways, yeah.
You know what I mean? And then there's people like us who are clapping back with sarcastic remarks like my wife, your character and Heather's. Your clapbacks were crazy.
Oh, thank you.
Like, I saw one. You talked about your skin and it was gorgeous. It was such a great sentence. Did you help come up with those?
No, I showed up to shoot the show and the writers had written all these jokes basically at my expense, which was really fun. I enjoyed
it.
But like, I remember one time I enter a scene and one of my co-stars characters was like, "Oh, hi Heather. I thought I smelled sunscreen." And one of them was like, "Oh, look at this undead Rue McClanahan."
Oh,
and I was like, "You know, I'm like a person." Which is how do you have? If my boyfriend and I watched Veep recently, and there's so many jokes about how the actors look in that.
Yeah,
and it's just
it's crazy.
It's
Glee did a lot of that too, where they just
skin.
Yeah, they play off of what the actor physically looks like, or the things that are actually happening behind the scenes. And in a way, I think it's cool because it does, I think, help bring some form of, like, authenticity to it. But at the same time, you're kind of like, shit.
Right.
You know?
Ryan Murphy's, like, writing jokes about me.
Exactly, literally.
Which we should be so lucky, I guess.
I mean, I'm ready for it.
Do you wear a lot of sunblock?
I do, yeah. I wear Elta MD 45 almost every day.
I used to wear Elta.
Yeah. What do you use?
It's my
anybody goes to South Korea, she gets a whole...
It's my favorite Korean thing. My favorite Korean sunscreen. And the FDA did something stupid and won't allow the original one in, and they've reformulated it for the States, and it's so absolutely frustrating, and I just, ugh, but because it's so good. It's just so good.
I've never been to Korea.
We should all go.
You seem very pro-Korea.
We want to go.
Seoul looks fabulous.
I want to go to Jeju Island.
You guys, let's all pretend that teapot is Korea, and you can just dive deep on into it.
Let's go right into there.
You're going to... go into that teapot.
Okay.
Inside there is a topic. So many topics.
There's so many topics in there.
So many. You're going to just like
yep.
sift through all of them.
Don't pick that one. Pick the other one.
And then just pull out the one that, yep, there you go.
So good.
Ooh, apologies. Sorry I showed up early today. I'm sorry that you asked me to do this late last night and I am here. I'm sorry for being a white man. Is that good enough for you too?
Yes.
That's actually how I apologize sometimes in fights with my boyfriend. I'll be like, "Sorry."
There you go.
Just insufferable.
Do you have a hard time saying you're sorry in real life?
For important things.
What does that mean?
Well, like I'll be like, "Oh, sorry, I'm late. Oh, sorry. Sorry, I'm in your way." Midwestern, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. Is it okay if I have like an extra?
Yeah.
Bit of sugar in there or whatever. I don't know who I am in that act out. An old grandma.
Yeah.
Yeah, but apologies are hard. You know, you got to eat crow, but it's always something I'm working on.
Yeah.
I was told by an ex that there's a difference between the words "I'm sorry" and "I apologize."
Mm-hmm.
And I always kept it, and I even like kind of implemented it in the one of the shows that I was in, but saying, we believe in word magic, so saying "I'm sorry," the person would always say, "You're not a sorry person. Do you apologize?" Like, oh yeah, I do apologize.
This
I'm
was
not
someone
sorry.
You were in a relationship with?
Yeah. I learned a lot. It didn't sound crazy.
they sound intense.
Well, I'm a lesbian. We're lesbians. But I do find that sometimes the word I'm sorry, especially for women, we'll just say it. We'll just say it all the time. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And my mom came to visit us for Christmas and she kept saying, I'm like, what are you sorry for? Oh, I'm just so used to saying it. But saying I apologize takes a conscious effort. Babes, do you have a hard time apologizing for things?
I don't think so, because I feel like people have all of these ideas around admitting that they're wrong or if they've made a mistake. I feel like that's just part of being a human being. Like, I have no shame or issue around that. So if I've done something that's hurt another person, it's really never my intention. So I, of course, am sorry. You know, I think that being able to just, even if you don't understand it, apologize or have empathy for someone else who's been hurt, I wish we all had more of that. And I feel like, sorry, I'm going to go on for a second, because I feel like when people have hurt me in the past, because let's say I am expressing a feeling and the person doesn't understand, really in that moment, I actually feel sorry for that person because they don't know how to have empathy or compassion towards me, which is an indication that they've never gone through what I've gone through. So for that, okay, you're lucky, but to not be able to empathize or have compassion towards people, to me, makes me sad for other people, because the more you have, I think the better you can exist in the world. So that's kind of my philosophy on it. Therefore, coming to the table and being like, I'm really sorry. I apologize for hurting your feelings. That was not my intention, is not hard.
But what if you did something that you actually meant to do and had to apologize? Like, that to me those are the hardest ones, where it's like,
you'll have a whole thing about like, I'm not sorry.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. If I meant to do something and I hurt your feelings, and I know the therapist would be mad at me, like, I'm not sorry for my actions. I'm sorry for the way that you're feeling about it right now, but I have to stand strong in my choice that I made. And I can't, whose feelings do I put first in this situation? Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's like, I'm here to empathize, but I can't apologize because I would do it again and I would sit and talk to you again to help you get through it. But I'm an asshole to some people. So, you know, it just depends.
I have that asshole side of me as well. And I think that sometimes the apology can be if I like take that too far. Or I'm somebody where like, if I'm heated, this isn't always the case, but like a toxic part of me is like, I will say things to win an argument, right? Especially
that Gemini.
Pre-processing that. And so I'll say something to win the argument or to end the argument. And then that's when things can get like a little intense. So now my boyfriend is somebody who really likes disagreements to come to an understanding quickly, and sometimes I have to be like, I need a moment for myself just to like process, to be like a little cat in the corner and like self-soothe and figure out how I actually feel before I can be like, so what happened earlier, I do apologize for what I said or for making you feel X. But sometimes in the moment it can be difficult for me.
Yeah, that's fair,
because I get, you know, it's like the Irishness. I get very heated.
Yeah.
And I think culturally there's so many people currently being told that you shouldn't apologize and that apology is weakness. I mean, we have that in...
Especially in males?
Yeah. And we have that in the president, who won't apologize or admit wrong for anything. And so, and that is sort of like a sign of strength. And that feels very destabilizing and tragic to look at. Like, as you were saying, like, I feel so sad for people who can't live more, I don't know, complexly.
Yeah, but it's almost like you live more complexly to find more simplicity, because if we're talking about like a pain level, right? The more pain that you're able to kind of hold or experience, again, gives you more ability to relate to the world, because there is so much pain in this world and so much heartache. The people that kind of live on this like airy-fairy level, we need those people to an extent because they can keep some brevity in things. But when you come to just relationship and understanding kind of the suffering, which has existed, I think, almost from the beginning of time in humanity, we've been so cruel to one another. But when you get it, you understand then how to respond, how to counter navigate, how to do the opposite of. You know, they say to know, we learn through contrast. So to understand joy, you have to feel sadness or blah, 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 blah. But people who are unwilling, in my opinion, to apologize or admit when they've done wrong or admit when they've hurt somebody is actually, to me, less of a sign of strength. I feel like the people who are willing to say I'm sorry or say, oops, I made a mistake, those are the people that I look at and I'm like, you are a strong character.
That's what he mm-hmm. was saying. I'm gonna just play the devil's advocate.
Hit us.
Because, and you brought up the president, trust me, that's not my favorite person in the world. And still I say, there are positions in this world that require a sense of hard-headedness and a soft behind. Those who know that sentence, but a sense of hard-headedness, a sense of I can do no wrong to make things run.
Sure.
The people that are out here being billionaires, running countries, they will only apologize to themselves in the mirror. But if they show any type of weakness, there's going to be another quote-unquote man, because mostly it is, that comes up and goes, well, I'll do something worse and I'll never apologize. It's a tantalizing vibration of power that has ruled humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Caesar times. You know what I mean? You had people like Caligula. You had all kinds of crazy people never apologized for what they did. Infamous, horrible, and yet they still ran our world, and they did that. And I think there's a balance, right? I think there's a balance of knowing when to apologize and knowing when to be like, the same person who taught me about the difference between I'm sorry and apologize, they would also say, that sounds like a you problem.
Mm.
And then I would go, you know what? You're right. Because that's the choice that you made. If you were with somebody else that didn't have a separate idea, that person probably wouldn't have brought anything up. That's literally a me problem when I'm going through something. I'm in a relationship with you, so can you figure it out with me? If not, understood. But at the same time, if that person doesn't apologize because they're steadfast in their decision, I have to go, okay, do I want to be around that person anymore? This has something to do with me. That's their choice. That's how they were raised. They can sit and however they want to. And if I want to continuously try to milk out empathy from them, that's more work for me.
Correct.
Right. Well, yeah. And you're already doing a lot of emotional labor to recognize either how they were raised or what makes them tick to be that way. And that feels like something in general women do much better than men, which is that kind of emotional labor.
Mm-hmm. It's emotional labor for sure.
And I do think to what you're saying, though, the only thing that any of us are in control of is our own selves and our own
reactions,
ways in which we react to people. So at the end of the day, if you do want an apology from someone and they don't give it to you, it's up to you to put your pieces back together and understand that that's a deficit or something in that person that really has nothing to do with you. Do either of you feel like there ever comes a point in time where it's too late to apologize?
It's too late to apologize. It's too late. I don't think it's ever too late to apologize.
I'd agree.
Yeah. I think that there are times when an apology can be detrimental to the other party. Like, you can be like, oh, fuck, like, I did something 10 years ago, and now I'm finally realizing I need to make my amends or whatever. So I'm going to sit across from you and be like, sorry for this thing, and then that person has to relive it. But I think if your apology isn't going to cause anyone harm, and your apology isn't self-serving, it's not about soothing your own guilt or something like that, then I think apologies can be very powerful even long after the fact.
I had a situation recently where years ago, like longer than 7-8 years ago, I went to a wedding and I was a mess at that wedding. I had a lot of emotional trauma, a lot of stuff going on, and I was pissed the whole time. Okay. And recently that person came back into my life and I was like, I need to apologize for how I acted at your wedding. To those, you know who I'm talking about, I want to officially apologize again. And when I did apologize to him, he was like, yeah, my wife has been mad at you for a while now. And I was like, hopefully you tell her I'm sorry. Do I need to call her? He's like, yeah, we'll figure it out. But I don't think that me doing it then, 10 years later, or 50 years on my deathbed, it would have mattered. It's just the fact that I thought about it and I was big enough to come up and say I did wrong.
So that was going to be my question, which is, do you guys think that the undercurrent of an apology is actually just acknowledgement, and that ultimately all people just want to feel seen and heard? So when you are apologizing, you're just giving a person acknowledgement. Like, for example, I'm thinking in my head kind of the classic story of, you know, the father dying on his deathbed and looks to his child who has suffered because they felt unseen by their father their entire life, who then looks at them in that moment and says, you know, I've always loved you, or I've always wanted the best for you, or whatever that is. We hear those kinds of stories. That's so healing for that person in that moment, because they finally get the acknowledgement that they've been yearning for or craving from that father figure. So is that what you think it lives under an apology, is just being acknowledged?
I think that an apology is number one, and then there's layers to it all, which we've established. Yeah. And I think probably the if there was 10 levels to it, I think the last five are forgiveness of self. It's like, I apologize for what I did, and if you didn't apologize right then, or you didn't see it later, or you, like, I literally contradicted myself 2 minutes ago, but stood your ground and didn't do anything. I also didn't say in my spiel that that person doesn't know that they did wrong. They just have to put that front up. And there's some type of a forgiveness, because like you said, that father, you know the actions that you do to people. You know it. And if you don't, welcome to narcissistic behavior 101. But like, the narcissist will never apologize because they're not looking for forgiveness. When you apologize, you're looking for that person to forgive you for something personally.
Yeah, I think apologies can also like heal a rift or a wound that happened and bring people. They don't always come to some sort of understanding or some sort of closer relationship. It's not necessarily the goal of an apology, but it's a potential byproduct, is, you know, bringing people back to together, like a stasis of understanding.
Yeah. Like, Tammy and Amy need to apologize to each other.
Like, it's really interesting to me that
you're Tammy and Amy.
They're just thousand pound sisters. It's really interesting to me, Raven, that you brought in the idea of when you go to apologize, you're seeking forgiveness. And it's so, that's so interesting, because that starts to question the motivation. Are you apologizing because you need to feel something in yourself, or are you apologizing because you know that you need to give that to another person? And my point of view has always been, in coming to apologize, it's not for self-redemption as much as it is because I feel guilt for having hurt. Or
but does that guilt dissipate once you forgive and that person forgives you? Does the guilt dissipate?
No.
Well, that's another byproduct. It no. should dissipate.
Well, and your apology can be, the outcome of your apology can be negative. You can be rejected. Like, yes. Someone could not forgive you. Someone can still cut you out of their life. So apology, can't it be both? Can't you want to?
For sure.
Can't you want to do right by somebody you might have wronged, but also soothe like some sort of guilt that you have?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And I mean, you don't want it to turn into like a pity party, because there are those things where people are like, oh, I'm the most terrible person.
Oh, and my gosh.
And that's like kind of an apology.
Martyrs.
Apology pet peeve. Kind of like, I'm sorry, but right. Does that drive anyone crazy?
That's been done to me so much in my life. That's normal. Like, I'm used to people saying sorry, but Really? So I don't really know. That's not a good thing. That's not the way to apologize. You guys.
I'm sorry, but you were asking for it.
I mean,
I'm sorry, but you were, you were kind of being annoying.
You've even told me that if you follow, you personally have said to me that if you follow up, I'm sorry with a but, it's not an I'm sorry.
I learned that later in life. Mm. And I'm also a comedian, so thanks for ruining my joke. I'm messing with you, baby. I'm making fun. No, but I do.
Maybe an apology is needed.
Maybe. Oh, from me?
Oh, I don't. Oh, I can't speak to it.
I'm really sorry for ruining
the joke. I'm just
a
therapist.
Correct. That. You are.
But I want to take the I'm sorry, but, and also the thing of like forgiveness, right? And take it two seconds to the left a little bit. When you hurt someone, please tell me if you guys experience this.
Okay.
I feel that their idea of you changes a little bit. That they start looking at you and start putting you in a file. Like, okay, this goes into the file. This is who they are. This is what happens, right? The energy will then kind of change. You can still love a person, but you just are learning more about them and you're filing. That's what humans do. For me, maybe I'm a selfish-ass bitch, but like, if I see that you're changing and I didn't know I was supposed to apologize, because not everybody can be like, you really hurt me. Can sure. I have an apology? I'm then, if you don't do that, I'm then taking it upon myself to read tea leaves, to read the room, be like, hey, I think I need to apologize. I know what I did, blah, 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 blah. I'm beating myself up / guilt. And I need for you to know that I feel that way. And if you would like, thank you for that apology. We're all good. I can relieve the pain a little bit. Is that selfish, you guys? Do I need to go back to my therapist?
No, I feel like that. That part of needing an apology and wanting to ask somebody for an apology can be so difficult, because you're like, well, am I just being dramatic, or was I actually hurt, or is the relationship worth it? Mm. Is it even worth me? What if they say no? That needing an apology is sometimes very hard to express, and then that can build resentment, and then resentment. Once you get to a certain point in resentment in a relationship, it's like over.
No apology ever can help.
Yeah. Right. It's like, because I've been silently resenting you for like 6 months. You know, that's the Irish Catholic in me, where it's like.
The joy in his face was crazy.
I don't need an apology. I don't need anything from you. I'll get on the boat and sail away. Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. Into my shipwreck,
mm-hmm. Right? Off the coast.
Resentment is a real killer. I mean, that's
gosh. It can kill professional relationships. Yeah. It can kill all sorts of relationships.
Mm-hmm. That's why learning how to communicate and express yourself is important, so you can avoid the resentment of it all. But
can I be honest?
Yeah.
I honestly thought you guys were going to be like, here's what's going on in pop culture. Let's chat it up. And this is such a nicer conversation than having to be like, I mean,
we just
I could talk about Below Deck Med for my whole life, but having to be like, what movie did you see, or what's going on with Taylor Swift, or what, this couple or whatever.
I couldn't handle it.
Yeah, I struggle with that, because I don't care that much.
But that's hour 3 and 4 of the podcast.
Right.
We're only an hour in.
Oh, it squares.
Yeah, exactly. No.
No, it's important to us to get to understand a human, and to get to understand a human, it's about taking those layers back and not talking about pulp culture. We want to know what you're doing. We want to know your career and things of that nature, but we wouldn't get to leave this table and say we actually understood you if we didn't know if you needed to apologize to anybody.
It's very true. So that's actually for everyone. We're going to take a moment. The cameras are here.
Yeah.
We can look into them, and we can apologize to anyone for anything that we've done. Who wants to start?
I don't have anything to apologize for.
Okay.
I sometimes, Mom, you won't be watching this probably. Sometimes I can be really your harshest critic, and I apologize for that. And I think it's coming from a place of love, and also, it's hard to watch your parents age. Mm. And I think sometimes I feel like I can change you, and I'm sorry for wanting to do that. I apologize.
That was beautiful. Aww. That was beautiful. Watching your parents age is
it's really hard.
wanting to change people is hard in general. That's a really...
But I understand what you're saying, yeah. Because they molded you. You're now seeing the world, and they're sometimes stuck in theirs, and it's like, I just want you to come over here to my side. I'm starting to see new things. Mom, right. Come here. I understand. I totally get it. Babe, you want to go next?
Sure. I have two apologies. The first apology is to Mrs. Sherwood, my third grade teacher. This has haunted me. Some of you might know this.
You're not about to tell the story again.
I'm not going to tell the story again, but I broke the snake skin. And it's just like, it fucked with my whole life, to be quite frank.
So, she's looking for forgiveness. That's what that is.
I guess. Or maybe this will be the moment where I've come clean before.
Yeah, free yourself.
But now
that
I'm
guilt.
Really just letting it go. And then for whatever reason, my sister popped into my head. So Mimi, I'm apologizing to you because I think that I've said things in the past that have hurt you. And oh my gosh, I am getting emotional. I've said things in the past that have hurt you and I didn't mean to hurt you, but I feel like as an older sister, there were certain things I should have been able to give you more freely and more protection in like a sisterly way, not a overbearing mom way, because I was so afraid of whatever was going on. And I think I'm sorry for hurting you and I love you. And it made me have tears in my eyes.
Oh my, I was going to do something funny. And I do something for real.
I think that wanting to protect your siblings from... I mean, it sounds like the small amount that I've learned about you, especially growing up in a potentially unstable household, there can be a protector's role or something like that that can be complicated because it's also not really your job.
At all. Yeah.
Yeah. You can feel failure for being... I feel that way sometimes as an older sibling where I'm like, I can handle things and I should have been able to stop something from happening. But
and then you're like, I'm seven.
Your siblings are living their own lives.
Right.
And yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, babe. How are you?
I was really going to try to be light, but you guys are light and I don't want to look like an ass, so I'll give it a real apology. I want to apologize to my mom and I want to apologize to my brother for being as distant as I was the last 2 years of my brother's life. It was scary and I was trying to protect myself. And hopefully my protection of my mom now after redeems that. But that was really hard for me and I'm sorry that I wasn't there as much as you guys wanted me to be. Mm. So my apologies for that.
That's a real one. Watching someone you love transition from this world into the next is really difficult and scary.
I'm so sorry about your brother.
You guys, why are we crying on Tea Time?
I don't cry. Y'all get this shit together. Y'all get a napkin. I don't cry on TV.
Wild.
I can't.
We're all, let's
he was born in 1991.
I was 90, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's toast. Today on the podcast, we are toasting to Generation Z.
Oh God, Gen Z, y'all at it again.
Gen Z is drinking less than young people in the past generations.
Good for you. Good no for liver, you. Yeah. Fatty liver.
In fact, according to a 2018 report, Gen Zers were drinking about 20% less alcohol per capita than millennials did at their age.
Because they're vaping more.
Because I wasn't in Gen Z. If I had been in Gen Z, it would have been the same.
Oh my God, hilarious. And 64% of them said they expected to drink less frequently when they grow older than the older generations do now. Because of this, Gen Z has been labeled the sober curious generation, referring to a movement geared toward becoming more mindful of drinking habits and embracing sobriety as a positive social and personal choice.
Y'all get on my damn nerves.
I want to believe that is because they are raw dogging life, but I do think that there's like a wider choice of substances for that generation. They're more heavily medicated than we were.
Vaping
weed, sure. Mushrooms, LSD.
I mean, their weed is legal. They're growing up in a society where weed is
legal. I used to buy
legal.
Weed from a guy named Nate in the back of his car.
Hell
and
yeah,
it
you did.
Didn't even get you high.
It was literally oregano.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, Nate.
Gen Z is too busy trying to, like, change the vernacular and, you know, doing all these things. And for the Gen Z that's in the room, I really appreciate you guys are doing a great job.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. But, like, well done. Thank God for you guys taking the alcohol out of the system. What are you drinking? Kombucha?
That's spiked. Yeah, I guess, I mean, I don't know.
You never drank, though. You had, like, one drink in your whole life, right?
I went through a little bit of a period where I was drinking, and I was having a Cosmopolitan and a nice Syrah. Your mom asked me that not the other day, but over Christmas. And she was like, really? She was so tickled by the fact that I once upon a time. But I was in my early 20s, and it was very inconsistent. Yeah. But yeah, no, I've never been much of a drinker. And I never got really into drugs because, again, so young, so out of control in the environment that I felt too hyped up and too...
You were all hyped up on Mountain Dew?
Right. Yeah, I was just all hyped up on the anxiety of my household.
Comment down below what movie that was.
I went to rehab, and so there were like a wide variety of people, ages in that room, and you're kind of thrown in with a bunch of strangers. And generationally, I think that like the younger people who were in my program were dealing with a wider variety of either substances or like porn addiction, that type. Phone. No one was there for like a phone addiction, but it's like go on a retreat. But there was more because
diversity.
Weed does insane stuff to your brain when you're like a teenager.
Yeah.
And so if you're like, I grew up in LA and everyone smokes weed, and I'm 15 and I'm smoking weed every day, it's like, well, that's definitely fucking with your development.
Without a doubt. It's sad that people don't understand that. And one of the friends that I referenced earlier who is schizophrenic, the doctors all really think it was actually brought on by the amounts of weed he was smoking. And not to say that there wasn't a predisposition in his mind, but it was triggered by that.
Yeah.
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 Wow, you guys, this was an emotional, unexpected roller coaster.
Yeah.
I kind of loved
really
it, though.
I like you, Brendan. Yeah,
I like
awesome.
You. Huge fan.
Yeah,
huge fan
here.
Of the pod now. Thanks for having me.
And you're on a pod, too?
I'm not on a pod.
Too bad.
You know, I don't really podcast that often because I get nervous to talk in such an unstructured way.
You did a beautiful job.
For so long. And this was so nice. It was like chatting with new friends.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah. Thank you
for... Do you want to promote anything?
...coming in.
I'm in a play in Atwater, if you're in L.A. It's called Foursome. It's gay and really fun. And you can follow me on Instagram at bscan.
Where you are very funny. Thank you for being here. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Babes, sign us off.
Thank you so much, everyone. Hey, don't forget to comment down below who you want to apologize to. We'll send it to them. See if you get some forgiveness. Like, subscribe, and hit that bell for notifications. We love you guys so much. Thank you for supporting us all of these episodes. Tell your mama about it. We love you guys. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.